Let's celebrate this month. Let's celebrate this week. Welcome to the Big Weekly Blend podcast, the companion to our Big Weekly Blend magazine. Hey, everybody, super excited to welcome back five-star chef Ivan Flowers to the show. It's a little bit of a combination of Eat, Drink, Be Merry Radio here on Big Blend Radio and our Big Weekly Blend, because he's going to teach us a recipe that we can use now. Really, all these beautiful, delicious vegetables. He's going to teach us how to make his recipe called Harvest Blend. We like the blend word. And he's also, this is perfect for Thanksgiving, by the way. And he's going to go over some of those holidays happening this week, between November 12th and 18th. And, you know, it's also National Peanut Butters Month. It's World Vegan Month. And I believe his recipe, other than the Parmesan, which you can get a substitute, is vegan. So everyone, Chef Ivan Flowers, you can see his recipes on blendradioandtv.com. Links of everything we're talking about and the music playlist are in show notes as usual. But welcome back, Chef Ivan. How are you?
I'm good, guys. It's nice to be with you today.
Yeah, it's been a while. You've got to. Mm-hmm. I know you're coming back on December, so we got to get back on our rhythm here, especially with our Big Weekly Blend and food. Mm-hmm. And it's cooking season, and I know I was quickly running through some of these holidays, and one of the days is National Fast Food Day. And I know that's not something you want to focus on. You want to teach people how to cook, and that's something you do. Now you do teach high school students how to, you know, bypass those golden arches, right? And actually do something for themselves in regards to cooking, which is great.
And health, absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do the students ever, like, help when it comes to Thanksgiving? Like, I know your recipe is perfect for Thanksgiving. It seems pretty simple to make. But is this a time for maybe the kids to step up at Thanksgiving and you know, all the different holiday gatherings and cook something and kind of show off to their parents and family and friends?
Yes, for sure. And, you know, Thanksgiving is changing quite a bit. You know, the traditional, you know, well, you know, it's turkey and then it's the sweet potatoes with the marshmallows mm-hmm. on it and the fatty stuffing. You know, that's starting to change a little bit. You know, a lot of Zoomers are, you know, they're not so much into turkey. You know, they might want to do something a little different. They don't want as much sugar, you know, with the sweet potatoes versus just roasting a sweet potato and, you know, controlling the amount of butter and just a touch of salt, pepper, and parm. You don't need all the heavy sugars and the heavy fats, you know, which we grew up with, you know. They get excited mm-hmm. about desserts, cobblers and crisps mm-hmm. and, you know, light apples, salads with a little bit of lemon and a touch of sugar and, you know, different things like that. You know, because really when you look at the traditional original Thanksgiving, it was mostly shellfish. You know, it was a lot of shellfish. It was mussels.
Exactly.
It was clams. It was game. It was, you know, just simply roasted potatoes, you know, no cheese, no butters, you know. So it's changing a bit. So I love a turkey.
Well, turkey's good.
I like turkey, you know, as long as you can keep it from going dry, because it does tend to go dry.
Nancy wants to use the word moist. That's what she's bringing.
I know.
We want
the moist. We want the moisture. Right. But turkey does tend to go dry, whereas other meats like chicken doesn't go dry like turkey. I don't know what it is that makes
you just have to. You know, the biggest mistake that people make is you're supposed to cook a turkey to 165 internal temperature. Now remember, mm-hmm. it's on the bone. So when you take it out of the oven, that turkey keeps cooking. Those bones are hot. So by the time you have to let a turkey sit at least an hour, and big turkeys, 25 pounds and up, an hour and a half. A lot of times that turkey will then go to 183, 185.
Wow.
And then the breast meat becomes like sawdust. You pull a turkey at about 155, 157. You tent it and you let it sit. That's how you get a moist bird. And then, of course, you put butter under the skin, on top of the skin. I mean, Tracy does, when she does the turkey, she works on it for 3 days. She puts it in the fridge. She lets the skin dry. So she's able to then work the maitre d' butter underneath. She stuffs the cavity with citrus, garlic, herbs to create aromatics. I mean, she like works with this. She crafts the turkey.
Wow. What you got to think too about, you know, how the turkey was raised and processed. And
yes.
I know in California, which is where you're based, there's Diesel Turkey, which we actually went to their farm, and they produce amazing. They have organic, and they're raised humanely. And so I think that's something to think of too. And what are we purchasing turkey wise? Any tips on purchasing the turkey? Because sometimes you end up walking out of there with two in the, from the freezer.
When you buy a turkey, be very careful. Look at the top bottom. And a lot of times it'll say injected with, let's say, a 15% solution. And all that is fat and salt. And they inject the turkey. And you see, well, 15% isn't a lot. It is. It is. And, you know, they inject it so it can be tender. But it's salty.
Oh, I see. They're,
They're brining it. They're injecting brine into the turkey.
Yikes. Mm. Now, what about stuffing the turkey? Some people say, do not put it on the inside, put it on the outside, or put it on the inside. What do we do?
I don't make stuffing anymore because I can't control myself. If I make stuffing, I make the turkey and stuffing sandwiches that night and a day later. I can't control myself. I learned from my dad a long time ago, if you're going to stuff a turkey, what you want to do is, if you stuff a turkey with ice cold stuffing, the bird is going to cook and the stuffing is not going to cook enough. You actually have to cook almost to about 110 degrees, the stuffing, put the hot stuffing into the turkey. And then by the time the turkey roasts, you get it to, you know, it'll carry to 165. The inside stuffing will be safe at least 140 or up. Then you're safe.
Yeah. See, my grandmother used to, like, opposed to my mother, where the stuffing was always cold and the turkey was hot.
Right.
My grandmother used to, but she used to take the turkey halfway out of the oven, tip it, and then throw hot stuffing in it. And it was, it was dangerous, but it worked. That worked.
Yeah.
And so I learned from her, but it was not the easiest thing to do. And I seriously wouldn't recommend it unless you have the gear for it. Like you need gloves and aprons and something on the floor. And
Work. It's work. It's a lot of work. They don't want to do that. People don't want to do that. You know?
No, I think it's dangerous. If you don't know how to do it, the first time you do it, it's like, whoa.
Yeah. Especially if you have eggs in the stuffing, you know, you have to be careful.
Yeah. Ooh,
and oysters. People do oysters.
No,
oysters. Yeah.
No. Moist. They're moist oysters. Well, okay. So Thanksgiving. Yeah. I mean, what I love about your recipe, and everyone, the recipe is up on Blend Radio and TV.com. Also in the show notes, whether you're listening on YouTube or Acast, Spotify, you know, check the show notes. But right there on Blend Radio and TV.com, it serves four. It's called Harvest Blend. So these are all these vegetables that we can get now, right? And it looks simple.
Oh, yeah.
Easy.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. So simple. And we're crossing Americana with a touch of Asian and a finish of Italian. And the trick with this recipe, two things. There's something that they sell, it's called a sauté wok. It's a sauté pan it looks like a wok. It has higher sides with a flat bottom. What that enables you to do is because you have to move the pan, you have to keep moving the pan. So the sides, nothing is going to fall out of this flat sauté pan. It's very, very easy to move the vegetables. What you want to do is you want to get the oil hot where you start to see just a little bit of smoke. Then when you're going in with your squash, your onions, your tomatoes, if you want to add jalapenos to it, I use red peppers. Everything is large dice, which is about 3/4 to an inch. and you want the vegetables crisp with integrity. So you move them quickly, 5 to 7 minutes, and you get them where they're just there and they all cook at the same time. You then put a little bit of hoisin. Hoisin sauce is a condiment, an Asian condiment. It's got soy, garlic, chilies, plum, molasses. It's used a lot with pork spare ribs. When you drizzle a little bit of that on and then you saute that, you then, it coats it lightly with this, a flavor that you just like, oh, like, where is this coming from? What sets the dish is when it's, when you're ready to plate it, you hit it with some fresh lime juice. You then plate it and you sprinkle a little bit of freshly grated parm. So you have umami from the hoisin. You have umami from the Parmesan. You've got the lime that, that wakes everything up, and you've got like almost a little crunch from the vegetables. It's so vibrant. It's so healthy, and it's like literally, it couldn't be any easier.
You put the lime in the coconut. I like this because
I know it's
it's vibrant. Like you're saying, look in the photo. I'm like, this looks healthy. It's delicious. It's got a little kick to it. And, you know, I love that it's cherry tomatoes, red onion, bell peppers, red bell peppers, yellow squash, zucchinis, Italian herbs, some garlic, Parmesan. So you could take the Parmesan and swap it for a vegan. It's probably vegan Parmesan. Or not use it.
They make vegan everything now.
So this could be vegan. It's vegan month. And really, so many people are vegan, and you go Thanksgiving, here's your, you know, your French fries, or here's your, get the pumpkin pie.
Exactly.
It's something nice that everyone can enjoy and be vegan, you know?
And remember, you can take this anywhere you want. Let's say you want to put a little bit of Calabrian chili paste in there, you know, the hot Italian chili paste. If you want that spice level up, put it in. You know, I mean, you can, cooking is, recipes are interpretive. You can make food do anything you want. The food doesn't control you. You control the food.
Yeah. It's like chemistry. Like when I got into chemistry class, they went, holy crap. Because I was like, I'm not understanding any of this. And the teacher said, think of it as a recipe. Now, today, people would probably, oh, that's so misogynistic or whatever. But it worked. Because I could relate chemistry to a recipe. And how you balance things out. A little of this, a little of that. Oh, that was too much.
Exactly.
Yeah, so don't do it next time.
You have to feel it. You have to feel it. As you're cooking it, you have to feel it.
Oh, I love this. I love this. Nice, vibrant, get some vegetables in. And it's at that, we're at that weird season where there's still an abundance, especially depending on where you live. I mean, everyone's growing squash here in Arizona right now. Where
I know. There's a squash. They're going to start marching down the street just now. There's so many
tomatoes everywhere. So I love putting the cherry tomatoes in too, because we always forget that they are fantastic sauteed. That's the best way to eat tomatoes to me, is saute them. You know, it's
Yes. You just split them. You make sure you split them.
Otherwise, they cook
a little bit.
I like this.
You put a platter of this out on a table with a spoon, I guarantee you it'll be finished within 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Students that don't even really kind of like vegetables that much went bananas with this. And really the hoisin and the lime make it very unique. It's kind of like, what am I tasting here?
Yeah, because I've always wondered what was in hoisin sauce. So thanks for telling us, because I've always wondered. Like, I've only had it maybe 10, 12 times.
And use it sparingly.
And I wanted to taste it separately because I couldn't identify it, because it just seemed really foreign to me. But it's pretty good, man.
And sriracha, I know you always talk about sriracha, and I finally had sriracha, like that I knew this was sriracha. And I've decided I'm a big fan of sriracha now. Like, sriracha me silly. I want it. I like it. It's good. Well, it's a great way to kick up the, you know, can we stop with the boiling of vegetables? Like, some I need,
oh,
I
yeah.
know
oh,
I need
know.
to be, but I think I know. That's what
Can't
happened.
We just saute them instead of boil?
And don't and the canned
don't like
things.
the boil.
Like, you know, there's a balance. But let's go through some of these other November foodie things, and they are, some of them might end up on your Thanksgiving table or holiday gathering. November 12th is National Pupusa Day. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, but it's an El Salvadoran holiday that celebrates the pupusa, which is a tortilla flatbread, like a tortilla flatbread. And it's filled with beans, meat. It's like chapatis, right? Beans, meat, and I think they put like vegetables. I'm seeing red onions on there, cabbage. I think that's something too. We've got to,
it's a big taco.
People put mushrooms, squash blossoms. Well, this is kind of cool. So apparently there's street food in New York too. I didn't know that, I think the idea of cabbage and tortilla and tacos go really well to me. Cabbage.
Oh yeah. Oh
it's
yeah.
Cabbage. Okay. Let's see. It's chicken soup for the soul day. That's good. It's Diwali. Ooh. Diwali is awesome. We used to celebrate that, especially in Africa. You know, and they would make all these amazing. Diwali is a Hindu celebration. All these little cakes and sweet things that are naughty for you, but they are absolutely delicious. So if you have friends celebrating Diwali, go to their house.
And the vendors would go up and down the streets with stuff to eat, and they would ring bells and dogs would bark, and you're like, ooh, look at that. I want that.
And Nancy, this is a day for us. It's National Pizza with the Works, except for Anchovies Day, because we can't eat anchovies. But okay, so your ultimate pizza, Chef Ivan.
Okay, it's funny you say that because I'm doing pizza tomorrow with the students. The trick, you know, Tracy's an incredible cook. I have to say this, and she gave me a pizza dough. And we were watching a show one day, and a guy in Vegas, like a really highly rated pizzeria, made the dough, and he would put it in these refrigerated spaces and let it sit for about 5 to 7 days. Well, I made some pizza dough last year, and a student was out, and I left his dough in the refrigerator covered. And when he came in, when we took the dough and we went to go on the counter with a little bit of flour, all you had to do is literally blow on it, and it would flatten. Touched it, and it just went to, you could take it to any thinness you want. The pizza came out. It was so incredible. Now, I'm not going to do that, rest it for a week, because I don't have that kind of time. But if you ever make pizza dough at home, loosely cover it. Remember, it's a yeasted dough. Let it rise. Mm. And let it sit for about 5 days, and you will have a dough, because dough is a living thing, and you will have a dough that you'll remember for the rest of your life.
Ooh. See, now my granny used to say, if you put yeast in anything, it needs to rest. It needs days. It needs to rest.
Smart granny.
She was like, it needs to rest. And she said she never learned it from a book. She learned it from making it and trial and error. And she called her kitchen she called her kitchen trial and error. It was really funny.
When we were in Asheville, I keep going, I know this is probably the 10th time I've said this about this restaurant. Piazza is a pizza place, and they were pretty new, and they won Best of Asheville, by the way, for pizza or new restaurant in Asheville, something like that. And we kept going there, and it was really bad because they did like, it was so simple, but this dough, it's like, you know, because we never finish it. You have a piece and, you know, try to slow yourself down. But when they did the mushrooms, like, you know how you taught us to always cook the mushrooms before you put them on the pizza.
Always.
And the onions.
Yeah.
And the garlic. We do that.
Yes.
But they didn't overdo the sauce, because sometimes it's like you get this heavy tomato sauce and it's like, okay. It's kind of like everybody does pasta with tomato all the time. It doesn't need to be. There's just all these different ways. But they had a little spinach. Olives, Kalamata olives, garlic, onion, mushrooms, right? And Let me tell you, the next day, that pizza was like delicious.
Mm-hmm.
It had this new texture when you heated it up, a new texture, and it was sourdough. So we were bringing the pizza home and then getting to this thing of, we don't want to eat it until, and it was like all white cheeses, right? Asiago and all of that. And without the tomato, I think it would ruin the sourdough complexity to this. And that pizza dough, I mean, it was just the next day. And it reminded me of when Nancy used to bake bread. We'd just wait the next day. We'd get sourdough.
Yeah.
And wait then, and wait yeah. and wait. And oh my God, that was so good. It was so good. It was like a creamy sourdough and not overpowering. It was, dude. Okay. Anyway, it's National French Dip Day. So the French dip, this is something. Oh, Ivan, you've got to have made French dip quite a bit before.
Yeah, I love French dip, a true French dip with actually, you know, what makes a French dip like, you know, there's, what is it, Philippe's in L.A.? is they use the true juice that comes out of the beef.
Okay.
Most restaurants, the jus that they serve on the side is basically like a bouillon, heavily salted base that they add water to.
Yeah, that's
so a true French dip, whether you're putting the sauce on the meat, which is a jus or a julie, and you can put some herbs in it, and then some, you know, you could dip the whole sandwich. That's a true French dip. And when you serve it with, I think, like a spicy mustard or an aioli, that's it. That's all you need.
That's nice.
That's it.
And the dip doesn't have to be ultra hot, because sometimes they serve it really, really hot. And you're like, dude, that's too hot. I can't go there.
It's interesting to me, because it's also, every time I think of French dip, and it is messy, and I think a French dip would be good for like Christmas Eve, you know, nice, nice, hearty French dip. And the other thing is, it reminds me of French onion soup. And French onion soup is, you know, you can get vegan type, right? But like a really well done, well executed, I should say, French onion soup is to die for, with the right cheese. I mean, and that is a beef base too, right? Are you going to be using bouillon, or could you take the French dip jus and put it into, and take that as like the base for the French onion soup?
Well, if you want to make a vegan French soup, not vegan, vegetarian, originally French onion soup is done with veal bones.
Yeah.
And they make a stock, and then they sweat the onions in the veal bones. If you do beef bones, it's a little heavy. If you want to make it with vegetable stock, most places they just throw raw vegetables in water and they simmer it. If you take vegetables and you roast them, put a good roast on them and make the stock out of that. Now you have a dark, enriched, fortified stock that you can make a vegetarian onion soup. You don't need to use veal or beef or any of that. And you know what? You wouldn't even taste the difference.
Okay. Cool.
See, that's I think you're right. The roasting makes the difference, because it's like a barbecue versus in the oven.
I'm hungry. I'm hungry. I want some French onion soup with provolone cheese, some nice garlic bread. I don't know. Like, a sourdough bread. Oh, a sourdough. Our friend Jeff here makes, where we are in Tucson, he makes these amazing loaves of sourdough. And I just finished the loaf this morning. And I put goat cheese on it. Yesterday morning, I spread goat cheese on it. Then this morning, I used it for avocado toast. And I put some hot sauce on it. I'm just going to say, it's good to be back on the West, man. Our next foodie holiday is, this is fun, Ivan. This is fun. I like doing these foodie holidays with you. I don't know if you've had this. I don't know if Nancy's had it. I don't think I have. It's National Indian Pudding Day, November 13th.
Oh.
And this is something that comes from New England. It's a traditional New England dish. And apparently it's going to be like an old school thing, and something that was made by the Native Americans in North America. Molasses and cornmeal are the main parts of this. It's like a sugary, like flat cakey kind of.
Yeah, it's
sweet
not a pudding.
Dish. Yeah, it's not a pudding, but it's
not
like a
really
cakey
a pudding.
Yeah, I don't know if it's come. They say that it goes back to from what the, it's from, like the very first Thanksgiving goes back to 1621 is the first mention they have of that from when the colonists came over. That's pretty amazing. Wow.
It's more it's more like a topping.
It looks like a cake with like a sop, like a crust on the top.
Yeah,
and then soupy in the middle. Have you had it, Ivan?
I haven't. It sounds interesting, though.
Molasses is always good, right? You know?
Yeah.
Yes.
You like that?
You have to add a little something to molasses to make it sparkle.
Yeah. November 13th is Anti-Bullying Week. And I bring this up because you're teaching high school students. Do you think doing things like cooking and getting kids together, because it's team, yet also solo, right? Because you're having to do what you need to do, but it's also teamwork and, you know, working in kitchens as you've done over your career. There's a teamwork and then yet you need to execute your part. And bullying could get in the way of that. So do you think, you know, it helps kids, even with their confidence, which helps in the world of anti-bullying? Because oftentimes the bullies are being bullied somewhere else or have some issues there. But do you think teaching cooking, that it helps them, you know, in regards
it helps
to
them
maybe, go ahead.
It helps them enormously. And I'll tell you why. I've run kitchens for a very, very long time. And some of the most talented cooks I ever had a very, very hard past and a very hard life growing up. And there's something about a kitchen when they get in and they become physical, where they're getting all that physical work, but they're also getting a lot of discipline because it has to be done correctly. And you have to work as a team, as a family. And I've seen a metamorphosis, not only in high school students, where I've had some really, really students that, you know, were having a hard time and there was a lot going on, kind of transform in a kitchen. And they're not going to do it in algebra. They're not going to do it in geometry. But all of a sudden they make something and they eat it. And someone says to them, you know what? This is good.
It's
I see
like,
it all the time. All the time.
Like, it's like art. Like in art class, people bloom. Art, creative writing, not something where everything is so over-regimented. Like mathematics is regimented and the answer has to be the one and only answer, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. In cooking, culinary is an art and the interpretation is different with everyone. You give somebody technique, which takes a lot of discipline, and then you watch them enter the environment of having imagination and creativity, they start to soften. There's a change, you know?
And they open up and they take risks because they've learned not to take a risk because if you grow up in the wrong environment, when you take a risk, you get hurt. So they stop. And then
and
they
you know
get
how
into you safe space where they can take a risk.
Well, do you know how you learn how to cook?
Taking
you make
a risk.
Mistakes.
Yeah.
You make mistakes. And guess what?
Yeah.
When you're learning how to cook in a cooking class, you're allowed to make the mistake.
Yeah.
Where as long as you're trying, we're not taking 20 points off because you got the wrong answer. Your heat was a little too high. Your oil wasn't hot enough. Now you know next time. So there isn't the slap on the wrist kind of thing. You got to burn something once to know how to not burn it again.
Yeah, I love this. You know, that I think it's growth, right?
Sure.
And through growth and personal growth and confidence comes from this. The other thing about teaching kids cooking is that they get to learn health. And what's good for you and making the, and going back to that national food. I'm not even telling anybody when that day is, that fast food day, because don't do it.
No,
I mean, I was talking about this on the last show. I have my French fry experiments in the car and those things don't change color. So I don't know what we're eating, but they don't get mold, and food that doesn't get mold to me is not food. So I'm just saying,
even when bears roam around your car and they don't break
they don't go for the science experiment, there's
they don't
wrong.
Go for it either. It's so funny.
November 14th is World Diabetes Day. And I wasn't going to get into that, but I was just thinking about this, Ivan, that, you know, there's so many kids with diabetes now at a young age. And sometimes, you know, sugar is a big part of the household. So I'm wondering, with you teaching, if they're starting to adopt habits that will help them not go into the world of diabetes, and, you know, get them to eat healthier and make better choices and eat the vegetables and start to appreciate the vegetables and the fruits and the spices, whereas before they would have poo-pooed it maybe.
We spend a lot of time, a huge amount of time on nutrition. Everything from reading labels to making choices to even looking at some of the fast foods that they eat. The, you know, the idea that the big food companies many years ago have given up on your health, and it's fat, sugar, and salt. And they're amazed. We give them alternatives. We talk about it all the time, because the reality is high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and diabetes are huge in elementary school. In elementary school, the levels are rising. We talk about the glycemic index and how eating certain foods can raise your blood sugar at such a rate, and how to properly eat, and we really hammer it. And believe it or not, by the end of the year, the responses are, that's one of the best lectures we've ever seen. We recreate, you know, if they like the sausage McMuffin at McDonald's, the it's like, I don't know. Oh, no, it's on two pancakes. It's the sausage, the McGriddle, right? It's probably the most delicious thing you'd have, with maple syrup. You put it in your mouth, you think you went to heaven. Well, we recreate that and change it to where it's like 85% healthier. So we teach them all of that. The problem is, you know, from the time the young kids are eating cereals, they're hooked. They're hooked on fat, they're hooked on sugar, and they're hooked on salt. And that's how they get hooked.
And they're addictive things. Those are things those are things that were put into canned foods to prolong the life of food that would have been dead otherwise.
Yeah.
They're additives to prolong the life of dead food.
Well, now wait, Nancy, good segue. That was perfect, because November 14th.
Oopsie.
No, that was perfect. Well done. Well executed. That's the, you know, that's the word of the day.
Oh, boy, here comes, oh, that doesn't here sound comes good. Emails.
No, National Pickle Day. Because
I
now,
love pickles.
I know that pickled and fermented food is good for our gut. They are a form of probiotics. Sauerkraut, oh God, a good sauerkraut. Ooh, it's really good. But now, is there a way to do this that it's okay, Chef Ivan, or should we just only eat a little bit of pickled goodness?
Let me tell you something when it comes to pickles. The amount of salt that they put in a pickle, I had a student, I was consulting for a kitchen, doing some consulting work, and she was 17 or 18. No, she was in her young, in her young 20s. She used to buy the 7-Eleven pickle. It was a pickle in that plastic thing with the juice. And she never read the fact that it had 800 milligrams of sodium per serving. The problem was the servings were 5. So she was doing 4,000 milligrams of salt every day just on the pickle.
Oh, my God.
They salt pickles and brines heavily because commercially they can hold on the shelves for a very, very, very long time.
Yeah, months.
You do not have to do that. You can make your own pickles with cucumbers. If you keep them whole, it'll take a week or two to pickle. If you cut them in half, it'll take a few days to pickle. If you do them as chips, they pickle overnight, and you can use a fraction of the amount of salt, put different pickling spices in it. You can put very light sugar or an artificial sweetener, and it's the most delicious pickles you ever had. Pickles are salted, just like anything else is salted, to last.
Yeah.
But who's going to make pickles? They think it's hard, and it's not.
Well, that's because they show these old ladies with those skirts that go to the ground, and they're all hunched over and heavy with a scarf.
Victorian times,
you know, those photos of people.
Oh, Like Eva here, our friend Eva, Jeff is her husband who does the sourdough, and she does a lot of pickling. She'll go in and get all the harvest, and she makes her own salsas and relish and pickles, and she doesn't overdo that stuff because she, you know, she's conscious of that. And I'm telling you, she just lets the, she has a way of pickling of a lot and relishing that allows the actual vegetable or fruit, because she does that too, to actually come through so you can still taste what that is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, you know, how many times have you gone and eaten a pickle from a store or like you're talking about? And you don't even, you can't taste that it comes from a cucumber anymore. It's just so overly done.
But you don't taste salt and cucumber.
You but you want to be able to still have that. Yeah, you want to have that balance. And by the way, one of my favorite things is peanut butter, since it's peanut butter month, Lovers Month, peanut butter and pickles is like, oh my God. But I'm weird, but it's so good. But Ivan, in restaurants, sometimes you'll go order a meal and they're going to say, okay, we're going to have this pickled this as a garnish, like a pickled, like thinly sliced red cabbage or so is that kind of like an overnight pickling thing like you're talking about for the
very quickly
sliced pickles?
Yeah, very quick. Yeah, not even overnight sometimes within an hour. If it's cut super thin, that'll pickle almost immediately. And you don't want to let too much of it in because you want it crunchy.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, let's get pickled. This sounds fun. I dig this. This is fun now. November 14th is National Spicy Guacamole Day. And
Yummy.
I love guacamole. But when people over-doctor it, they ruin the integrity of the guacamole. My recipe is you take the avocados. You mush them up. Don't over-mush them so it's baby. You want some chunky. You want, like, let it still be an avocado. I would take just like a spoonful of my favorite salsa. You know, it could be fresh salsa. Whatever. Put it in there. If you need to add some chili powder or some just a few. But if you'd have, people tend to make this like a paste and it shouldn't be. And you don't want like salsa throughout it. Like you need to still have chunks of actual avocado in between.
Yes.
Am I right? Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like.
Well, that's exactly how we make it. And what Tracy does is she buys the avocados hard.
Mm-hmm.
She puts them in a paper bag.
Yeah.
And an apple. She puts an apple in. She, I always say to her, it's a French laundry avocado. She gets them in a few days to a point where that avocado is so perfect that when you bite into it and you put a little salt and you just eat it out of the skin, it's avocado times 1,000. It's got a window. An avocado has a window like a banana when it's just right. Other than that, if you go too far with a banana, it gets gassy, it gets weird, and avocado turns brown, it starts to get mushy. There's that window, and that's when you have to eat the avocado.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. Right? Now, what about people putting avocados in their fridge? Because every time I've tried that, it comes out mealy.
Oh,
it's like,
weird.
It's weird. It's weird to me.
Yeah.
I know everyone does it.
It's like tomatoes. Yeah. It's like tomatoes. You know, they're not meant to do that. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So there we go. Don't do that. Okay. Don't put, I put tomatoes in there in the fridge. You need to just eat them up and get on with it. That's the thing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Don't put it. Okay. Now, let's go. What's in store for us for November 15th? Oh, well, speaking of refrigerators, it's Clean Out Your Refrigerator Day. It's also National Recycling Day, so that's a cool thing. So we can recycle our bottles and stuff like that, jars, you know, good stuff. But Clean Out Your Fridge Day. A clean fridge is probably a good thing. And then what about expiration dates? How real are those things, do you think?
You know, when it comes to expiration dates, just because something hits the date, it doesn't mean that it's expired. Sometimes they can go a couple of weeks after that. They also now, like with dairy, with cream and milk and yogurt, I just found this out recently, they have longer expiration dates, but you have to ask for it. So when I buy cream and I buy milk from my purveyor, I tell them, give me the long, and these things last for 3 months. So there's a way to buy dairy where you can find longer expiration dates. But basically, they have to put some kind of date on it because they have to rotate the product. so they can keep buying more, so the food manufacturers can keep producing more. So yeah, they have to put a date on it. But you know, eggs can last 6-7 weeks and be fine. I've had cream that I've used, you know, 3 weeks after, and it's fine. You smell it, you check it. So, you know, that could get expensive if you just throw it away, you know, check it first.
Yeah, so what about eggs? I mean, that's a whole confusing thing, because you should know where it came from. Like, sometimes, like, we travel full-time and pet sit, and we'll go to someone's house, and they're like, oh, eat the eggs. And you go in there, and there's like, they're just in an egg thing. You know, they're not in a carton. You look at them, like, did they come from the farm? Normally they have cool colors if they came from a farm, and you open them up, it's nice and orange and the yolk and everything. But we don't know if it's going to be good or not. Is there a way to tell if an egg is bad when you crack it open?
Well, the different colors on eggs is the earlobe of the chicken. That creates the color of the egg.
Oh,
if you buy a fresh egg, the shell is very thick. The egg lasts a lot longer. Commercially grown eggs are very thin shelled, and they turn a lot quicker. I know people that don't even refrigerate eggs, which is crazy. Well, you should refrigerate eggs.
Even if they come from the farm? Well, yeah, if it's hot in your house.
But generally, she would get 6 at a time from neighbors that had chickens, and just leave them on the counter and use them up within 2 days.
Right.
So, but I always would, because I was always taught, put them in the fridge.
Yeah.
And she's like,
if you get an egg from, you get fresh laid eggs. There's nothing better in the world. I have students that have chickens, and they bring fresh eggs in, and it's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
The difference.
Even when you crack them open and they fall into a pan, I'm like, oh, fresh or not?
Yeah,
I can now tell. I've been in so many kitchens that I am like, nope.
You'll know an egg is bad when you crack it. You'll smell it. You'll smell it.
Oh God!
Have you ever smelled a potato that went bad?
Oh, no.
Oh my God!
The best is garlic. Garlic that goes bad is
oh yeah, it actually ferments, like it gets all
Make it into some.
I don't like it, but you got to be careful with onions and garlic. Be careful with those.
Let me give you a trick with garlic. Let's say you buy some garlic that's peeled. You buy a small container of peeled garlic because you don't want to peel it. So, if you want it to last a long time, you cover it with oil and put it in the refrigerator. Now you have garlic oil, and that garlic can last up to 3 to 4 months.
Now that's a good one.
Well done.
That's a good one. Wow. I like that. Yeah,
we go from place to place to place, and 9 times out of 10, both the onions and garlic are moldy.
Yeah, the onion thing scares me, because onion, that mold stuff can make you not a good thing, but like celery.
No, you throw it away.
I put celery in water. Like when we get celery, I'll cut the stalks off, the tops off, try and get it with the tops already, not already pre-cut if you can, but cut the greenery off and the base, and then I put it in clean water. Mm. And that celery, if you just put it in a glass, is the perfect thing. Just in a glass.
You want to know another trick with celery?
Yeah,
if you don't want to go through that, you wrap it in aluminum foil.
Really?
You tightly wrap celery in aluminum foil, and you can have it for weeks.
No way.
You want to know trick with celery? It's the best thing to clean your dog's tooth. It's the best thing to clean your dog's teeth. They love it. They go for it, and it cleans their teeth. There you go.
Oh. I never knew that.
Celery and apple is not bad for dogs. It's good for them, quite frankly. So,
vitamin-wise, moisture-wise, I said moisture.
Oh, yeah, potassium. Potassium level is fabulous.
And they like the crunch, and it cleans the tartar off their teeth, which is a lot easier than brushing your dog's teeth.
Yes.
So
celery and peanut butter.
I was going to say peanut butter, and then you could put the raisins on it.
I would leave the peanut butter out for an animal.
But dogs love peanut butter unless they're allergic to it.
It doesn't make it good for them.
Yeah, it is. It's fine for them, and it's one of the great ways to get hide a pill in it and give it to dogs. Doggies love their peanut butter. It's a good treat for them. But do not get peanut butter. Watch the labels, because they put xylitol in peanut butter, and that can kill your dog. So you cannot put xylitol. Watch those labels.
You really have to read labels.
I know we've talked about this before. And in Arizona, Yuma, the peanut patch, when we go to Yuma, go get peanut butter there, because they just crush it.
It's real.
There's floating oil on it. It's like,
it's real.
You can do it. You want it smooth, crunchy, chunky, but they don't add anything to the peanut butter. But if you go to the store, that peanut butter, and I'm sure there's other places where you can get nut butters and butters that aren't preserved like that. But if you go to the store, they put sugar in your peanut butter now.
And they put emulsifiers. Yeah.
When we lived in Kenya, we used to get all kinds of nut butter.
Mm-hmm.
And we could get almond butter, we could get cashew butter, because it grew wild on the trees in Kenya. Oh my gosh, it was such a different taste than here.
Do you ever use nut butters, Ivan?
I do.
Ah,
I do.
That's something different to use.
Cashew butter is sweet.
Delicious, yeah.
It is awesome.
Yeah. I like a Thai dish done with a peanut sauce, where you melt the peanut butter into a little coconut milk or cream. You put in spices. Mm. You finish with, chopped fresh cilantro, a touch of sesame oil.
Ooh.
And then you do a cold sesame noodle or a warm sesame noodle. I love peanut butter.
Me too, man. I'm like a dog like that. Now, it is National Spicy Hermit Cookie Day. Now, come on, you know that hermit, like, you know, when you save a dough mixer and then it goes to the next person, like a chain mail of dough. Yeah, I used to do the hermit cake thing. We do hermit cookies, where you'd make the batter and then give it to somebody else, and then their batter expanded, and then they'd give it to someone. What is that? Like the chain mail?
I don't know. I've never heard of that. Hermit cookies.
No, it's an African thing.
It's not. Persian. I suppose. Yeah, that's Africa, kind of.
Hello. Yeah. It's the sharing of what you have on your plate. It's the sharing of the dough. So the woman makes more dough than she needs. And at a certain point, the dough is not going to be good anymore. So they all have their own kind of ingredients and way of doing it. And so when you give away dough to this one, you'll get a dough from another one.
Yeah.
So nobody goes without the dough.
It's a chain mail. It's like a community dough.
Yeah, it's like in Africa, it's very much like that, where they all shared. And then
the 60s thing. I think it's, you guys are a bunch of hippies, and who knows what was inside that dough. I'm just saying.
There's nothing wrong with the 60s.
What spice is that? There's a little herb and spice in that.
There's nothing wrong with the 60s. Come on, look at the music that came out.
We used to call it the hermit thing, and actually now reading this is not. This is about cinnamon, nutmeg, cloves.
Mm-hmm.
Fanny Farmer did it in her cookbook years ago in 1936. Raisins, currants, dried fruits, all of that. So getting into that season. But the hermit cake is very similar, but it was like that dough starter kind of thing that went around. It's also National Raisin Bran Cereal Day. Everybody, right, Ivan? You know everyone eats this, you know?
Not seen anything.
You know, that was my favorite cereal growing up, and the problem is now it's so high in sugar because of the raisins. Yeah, the sugar is through the roof. I can't eat it anymore.
I thought it was good for bran. Bran was good for, you know, the fiber.
Well,
and the
yes. I love the fiber, yes. But the sugar is astronomical.
Oh,
you know? And it, You know, and when you buy cereal, again, reading a label, they actually have the size. So the serving size will be a half a cup. No people in this country pour a half a cup of cereal into a bowl. You're eating 5 to 6 times that amount. You've got to multiply it. And then you're getting, oh, my God, you know, 3,000 milligrams of sugar.
Wow. Well, speaking of sugar, it is also...
I would like my fiber buried underground. Thank you very much.
Well, there's other ways to get fiber. It's called salad.
Yes.
I'm just saying, cabbage, broccoli, Nancy's favorite. Yeah. It's National Bundt Cake Day, November 15th.
I love that.
A little bundt cake. I used to wander around saying it was bundt cake day, but apparently it's not a butt cake. It's a bundt cake.
Bundt.
And, hey, and everyone have those bundt pans.
It's about the pan.
Get that dusty bundt pan out and start cooking up or baking up those bundt cakes.
They were pretty. I like them.
You could do it like coffee cake for, you know, when people come over, have a little cake, a nice slice. You can do a little drizzle of the
like a center, so you could put a candle in there. Or
do you ever bake? Chef Ivan, do you ever bake? I know Tracy bakes. Do you bake?
All the time. With the students, I bake all the time. Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Cool. Have you done a bundt cake yet? I mean,
we've done bundts. We do the mini bundt cakes. We have the silicone pad that has the mini bundt, indents in them. And we do the little mini bundt cakes, and then we like to finish them. I show them like chocolate ganache, how to finish them with chocolate ganache and different things. But I like little mini bundts.
It's a good thing we're not calling it butt cake anymore. We all like little mini butts.
Right.
November 16th is Beaujolais Day. You know the wine.
Beaujolais.
I don't pronounce it. Nouveau, I think. I don't know how to pronounce Beaujolais any of that. I know how to drink it. But that's a nice table Beaujolais. Wine for the holidays.
Beaujolais. No, it's Beaujolais Nouveau.
It's bougie.
Well, depends on whether you're French or not.
Yeah,
Beaujolais Nouveau.
Okay, so November 17th is International Students Day. That's cool. Guinness World Records Day. Oh, come on, Ivan. Ooh. Get the kids together and make the world's biggest pizza. Come on.
That'd be awesome.
Temecula. Oh, my goodness. You got the wine. Wouldn't that be fun to do something like that?
Right.
November 17th.
How big
17th
would that have to be?
I know. Huge. I don't know. We'll have to look up the records on that. But
yeah.
National Homemade Bread Day. I think homemade bread is nothing like it.
Yummy.
When it comes out the oven, making bread is just not that hard. You can do some that is self-rising, yeasty thing. But do you do that with the kids too, make bread?
I do.
Cool,
My favorite bread is baguettes because it doesn't have any fat and it doesn't have any sugar in it. Also sourdough, very healthy bread.
Oh, we're back to the sourdough.
I always my granny taught me that if your bread wouldn't rise, if you didn't have at least half a teaspoon of sugar. Is that not true? You said that the other chemicals eat the sugar. No?
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Science experiments, I like that.
It's a craft. You know, making bread is very specialized.
Yeah.
Like there's bread and then there's bread that you eat and go, oh my God.
Yep. I know. That's what Jeff has here. I mean, I'm like, okay, you guys leave the house so I can pig out on the bread.
I love bread. Tracy loves bread.
And he's got the little bit of flour and the flour. On the flour
on the
side.
You can do it without sugar. You can make it without sugar.
He said baguette.
Yeah, of course. Of course you can.
The bread that he makes, he has that little bit of flour on the side, but it's not like chunky flour. You know, and sometimes it's burned. He doesn't burn the flour. It's like the perfect thin little layer of flour. Mm. It's like, how do you get to that perfection? He's into it. Like he has a sour. We hung out with him the other night when we first got here. He's doing this journal. I'm like, what's all that about? I thought, you know, are you working? He goes, it's my sourdough journal. Like, he has a journal of his sourdough baking. Like, serious.
Yeah,
like,
sure. Yeah.
I'm like,
it's a very specialized thing. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And I think he studied, there's a bakery here in Tucson Barrio, that is really huge. And we're, I mean, we're in the gastronomy capital of the world here in Tucson. We're very proud of our city here. And that is a good bakery. And that's where he went to learn, I think. But it's also baklava day now. That's a little sugary goodness, isn't it? Baklava.
Oh, I have to tell you, I'm not a fan of baklava. Oh. I'm just not a fan. It's too sugary. It's like finishing a meal and putting 6 tablespoons of sugar in your mouth. It just, to me, it's overwhelming.
Well, you know what it is? Over sugary things, I put it, if I eat it, my teeth immediately feel like they're bending in half. Like they're literally bending. And I don't understand this. I need to ask a dentist, but I don't want to see one ever. But I have why is it that you feel like your teeth are literally bending?
Because I'll be very honest with you. Very honest with you. There was a doctor in the early 1900s that did research on sugar. And the reality is, as human beings, we were never really supposed to be eating sugar. Sugar is without a doubt one of the worst things that you can put in your body.
Yeah.
So what happens is it was supposed to be a very light treat. And the food company said, wait a second, it's addictive. So in America, it's got to be sweet. It's got to be sweet. It's got to have salt. It's got to have a fatty feel. And they started putting it in everything. Then they went to high fructose corn syrup, which is the worst.
It is in
everything because they want to get you addicted.
Even peanut butter.
Yes, of course.
Remember when I called, I don't know if you weren't on the show, but I called we had another doctor on the show, and we called the corn company, the corn people on the show, because they were trying to hide the main person's phone number and everything. So we called the office and had to talk to them on a live broadcast.
Terrible.
And I got into, I mean, I shouldn't be even saying this on the air now, but it was so much fun. It was our Rants, Raves, and Rock and Roll show, because we went after Monsanto's and people like that, because we will. It's not good. People are not healthy with this food. And
No,
it's not. And it's bad for farmers. It's bad. Like, that's a whole other show. But we called.
It's bad for the land as
we
well.
We called and we talked to the secretary of this person. And we left a voicemail on the air and said, and when we called, we said, this is a show, blah, blah, blah. You can hang up on us if you want. So we did give her the option of hanging up. And then we left a voicemail and said, please call us back. We'd like to interview you to find out about high fructose corn syrup and what you're doing with corn and all of this, you know. And it wasn't me who left the message. It was the doctor on the show. And she straight, and she I'm not putting her name out there because Monsanto went after her too. So we're not doing that. But anyway, so we do this, and one day I'm working quietly and writing an article or something, and my phone rings, and it's this dude. And I went, Big Blend Ready. He goes, is this Big Blend Ready? I said, yes. Like, how can I help you? You know, this is Lisa. He goes, this is Lisa. Oh, and he went off on me and just started yelling at me and carrying on like a big baby, like a 2-year-old tantrum. And eventually I just said, well, are you done? He goes, yes. And then he hung up.
Of course.
And he yelled at me.
Do you know how strong?
You do that to my secretary.
Do you know how strong the sugar lobbies are in Washington? You know how strong the sugar industry?
We're not allowed to do this anymore. We're not allowed to do this kind of stuff
the
anymore.
Billions in profits. Billions from sugar.
We're little bugs.
Because the whole country is addicted to sugar. It's addicted.
Fast food. Well, that's what I love what you're doing with
there
the kids.
There are certain things that are addictive. Alcohol, coffee, sugar.
If you're going to have sugar, have wine. It's National Zinfandel Day on November 17th. I can get behind that. If you're going to have sugar, have wine, not too much of it, but I think fermentation in wine has been around historically though. You know, before the candy sugar stuff.
Fermentation is a good thing. It lessens the evil, but it makes it taste better.
Are we allowed wine, Chef Ivan? Come on, we're allowed wine. We're allowed to do that.
Do you know, well, not only is wine good for you, there's not as much sugar in wine as people think through the fermentation process.
Exactly.
A lot of that sugar is, you know, so people think wine is pure sugar. It's not. It's not at all. And if you're going to drink wine, yeah, drink red wine, you know?
But
there are just a lot of mistaken views out there because people kind of don't do the research and a lot of other things, you know? I love wine. Tracy and I love wine, especially Zinfandel.
Oh, my God. And it's good with cheese.
But when wine ferments, it's a chemical process.
Yeah.
And I learned this in chemistry. Yeah. Because my thing was, let me take it to a level that I understand, not where the teacher was. I want to talk about wine and fermentation and the lessening of the sugar. But the sugar is it's like a process. It's a chemical put in there. Even though when I say chemical, it's a chemical. It induces reactions by other ingredients to do something they wouldn't do if the sugar was not there. Mm. But once the sugar does its job, it goes bye-bye. It dissipates.
Mm. Yes, exactly.
That's the word. It dissipates.
Same thing in bread. When you're playing
I'm
sugar
going back
with the
to
yeast.
Like college, right? I'm trying to read. Yeah. So, like, if a bread is baked correctly, you don't taste the yeast. If you taste it, there's too much in there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's an agent to make every other ingredient act together nicely and produce what you want.
Well, I want to go further too, because it's also apple cider day, and that is fermentation. And I remember drinking apple cider in England. Yeah. And I think that's where it kind of dates back to. They say 3000 BC when they started using crab apples. And that's where I remember picking crab apples in England I remember picking crab apples as a kid in England and like not knowing that because I was like fresh out of Africa into like, oh, apple country. This is different. Mm-hmm. And going like, these do not taste that great just biting
into
them.
Apples.
And so that's what they used and did cider. They did sloe gin, but they did cider. And now that's a lot of what people use at their holiday table is sparkling apple cider. But apple cider, do you drink that ever, Ivan? Do you ever cook?
I do. I do. As a matter of fact, let's say I was doing a pork chop. What you want to do is you want to take apple cider and you want to put it in a saute pan and reduce it to a syrup. At that point, you can add apple cider vinegar, different things to it, herbs. You can also do a beurre blanc, which is a French butter sauce, where you have shallots reducing with the apple cider and then put cold butter in and go back and forth and do an apple cider beurre blanc to go with a pork chop. It's delicious.
Does that take away the beating the heck out of the pork chop with a meat hammer? Because I'm just going back to, I'm so dating myself, but my granny taught me with the meat hammer, you beat the crap out of meat, you tenderize it.
You're not supposed to talk like that to the meat. You're supposed to go I'm going to make you nice and tender.
No, and then later, I think when you add certain things to the recipe, it softens it by itself. A natural way, but I don't know.
Let me tell you something. When it came to scallopini, is when you take a piece of protein and you hit it with the flat part of the mallet. What that was done for originally was to create profit, to take something small and then make it very, very thin, make it look bigger. Pounding something doesn't necessarily tenderize anything except making it thinner. If you're cooking it correctly and you're brining it or you're marinating it or you're cooking it quickly, you're going to get a very tender thing. But, you know, to take a chicken cutlet and then make it look three times the size, people go, ooh, and you can charge a lot more, when the reality is not necessarily the case.
Oh, she only did it to beef. She only did it to beef, as I recall. Was just she beat the if there was a steak, she beat the crap out of it.
Wow.
You know, they do it with veal. I would never touch veal. I don't cook with veal. Yeah. Veal is one of the most tender meats there are because it's a baby cow. It's a calf.
Yeah.
to have to, you know, to take veal and beat it. So you're going to do a veal Milanese. You're going to do a, you know, veal cutlet parm.
No.
You're just making it bigger. The meat already is butter.
Oh. Wow. So this is interesting, man.
Good.
And I'm glad we're doing this holiday thing with you, Chef Ivan. This is fun. I got our last one, though. And I'm glad you brought up the apple cider because,
wow,
the apple cider vinegar, by the way, is really healthy. It's healthy. It's a
really
good thing to drink.
It is.
Now, I didn't bring this up before we started recording, and I don't know how to pronounce it. I should have asked you before because this is, I don't know what the heck I'm saying, but good luck to this. So I'm sorry if this is confusing to everyone. But this is, and I kind of know I've heard of it before. It is a French soup, and I think it's Vichyssoise.
Yeah, it's cold potato soup. Yeah.
Cold.
Yeah.
Ice cold. In an ice cold bowl with an ice cold spoon.
Like a gazpacho.
No,
exactly.
The potato version.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why are we doing cold soups?
Oh, I mean, you know, because, you know, for the same reason why gazpacho is so delicious ice cold, the potatoes, you know, when you're serving them, you're making the soup and then you're chilling it. Sometimes things, when they're hot, don't transfer as well. Sometimes things, when they're cold, like if you think about borscht.
Yeah.
When you make borscht, which is very, very involved, and you serve it ice cold, without that heavy heat element staying with the cooking, going into that cold, a lot of the flavors develop. And it's very different on the palate. It's like ice cold ice cream.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, oh, it's refreshing.
If you take something out of the fridge the second day, sometimes it tastes better. Tastes better.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like pizza. We're back to the pizza. And chili. Well, actually, potatoes. Like, okay, so like if you boil a potato, like, or roast it, either way. I do like potatoes cold. It's weird. And there's like,
well,
even like if you could take a full roast, like a roasted potato or baked potato, I should say. I'll eat that cold, and there's something like the taste is so different when it's cold. I eat a lot of cold food. That's why I'm asking, what is it about me eating cold food? It's weird.
Right?
I find some of it refreshing. But the cold potatoes, there's like a whole other texture, even when it's cold.
Sometimes heat hides the flavor.
Yes. You know? Think about cold pizza the day after. The pizza's in the fridge, and you're like, I'm not warming this up. I'm eating it like this. It's delicious.
Oh, yeah, heck yeah. With the beer, thank you very much.
And especially the tomato sauce is way more brilliant.
No. Nancy, though, she takes pizza, and you don't microwave it to heat it up. You're going to eat it up in the next morning. She puts it in a skillet, and then she fries an egg on top, but you still have to have the runny yolk, and you have to get the temperature up. There's a thing, and I think you put a pan over it, a lid over it, right, Nancy?
Yeah.
So that it cooks. She cuts it. So the bottom of the pizza has got that crunch, and then she puts the lid over it, and the egg is...
Yeah, it actually softens the crust a bit.
But it has the crunch. Still has the crunch.
Because it softens the crust of the pizza if you put a lid over the pan. If you don't, the crust gets harder.
Right.
So I put a lid over and I put an egg next to it. I flip the egg and it cooks wonderfully into the pizza.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to keep the lid on the pan. Otherwise, it doesn't work. I've tried it a million times in different ways. And then you can sprinkle cheese on top, which is good, or whatever else you want to sprinkle on top is magical.
I think we need to have a National Play With Your Food Day. Get in there and do things like that. I mean, and Nancy's not going to be the first person to do it, but I think we need to have that creativity and not be in the kitchen. Just try something, you know, have some fun with it, you know, see what you can do.
There was a pizzeria in upstate New York, and it was in a college town. And what he did is when the pizza would come out and he'd serve slices, he would put shredded ice cold mozzarella on the pizza, and he couldn't keep up with it. He could not keep up with the slices.
Yeah.
Because you've got that. Oh, that's like a texture thing again. Well, this
yeah,
is
it's a dichotomy.
So yeah. Let's go back to this cold potato soup that I can't pronounce. So this is potato, onion, leeks. Oh my God, I love leeks in potato soup. Oh my God. So this is, it's interesting that they do it at this time of year. Since it's French, you would think it'd be a little cold over there, but they do this. Is there cheese involved? Cream and chicken stock? What?
Yeah, cream, chicken stock. Not normally. Basically, you're going to make you're going to cook it in cream. You're going to cook it with stock. You're going to put herbs in it. You're going to go into a blender. You're going to pass it through a chinois. So you just get the pure, perfect soup, and then you're going to chill it. And then you're going to put it in an ice cold bowl with an ice cold spoon.
Oh,
and
wow.
Leeks.
What do you mean you put it? Okay. So I know when I pour beer, hey, Nancy and I ran a bed and breakfast again. Three times now with Nancy making the breakfast. Just saying, Nancy's got the most colorful language I've ever heard in my life.
In the kitchen, doing that. I'm good. But hey, we got good tips.
We got good tips. We got good reviews. We did good. But just going back to like when guests would check into the B&B, everyone lining the roads, bed and breakfast in Nashville. Who knows if we'll do it again? We said we wouldn't after the first, but we keep doing it. It's interesting, and it's fun to actually be under that pressure. Like, you have to serve these 10 people at once, and everybody's got dietary things and whatever, and you've got to get it done in a tiny, tiny Victorian kitchen. It's crazy. But, like, when people check in, they brew their own beer there. And so then they take all this, the wheat stuff, and they make them into dog biscuits and take them to the Humane Society. It's very cool. But they keep all their beer glasses chilled. So as a restaurant or someone making this, are you putting the spoons in the freezer to do this?
Yep. You're putting the bowls and the spoons
the
in the freezer.
And the spoons.
Yeah.
Yes. And then, of course, the soup is ice cold. So when you pour it into the bowl, it won't crack.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're in trouble.
Oh. So do you do that for gazpacho, too?
Yes, I do. Yes.
You do?
I do. Oh, yeah.
Now, when someone eats, like, has this bowl of cold soup, ice cold soup, is it normally like a little bowl, or would someone have less, like, as a big meal? And is it different?
No.
It's like little.
It's done in a larger bowl that's wide, but the reality is there's maybe about 4 ounces in there. Because you don't want to serve it. It's a refreshing start to a meal.
Mm-hmm. Is it like that, what do they call it? Before the appetizer? I can't pronounce anything. You know that, Ivan.
The amuse-bouche. Yeah.
Well, you can say that. Yeah. So okay. You have.
Well, you can do gazpacho gazpacho in shots. So you can, for example, you can have ice cold shot glasses, put gazpacho, and then put an oyster on top. And you do the oyster and then do the shot of gazpacho.
Don't be a baby, Nancy.
I know. I'm just like,
but this would be kind of a cool thing to do for Thanksgiving dinner. I feel we need to shift traditions and do something like gazpacho or this soup and say, everybody do a shot. And Uncle Joe, I always say it's old Uncle Joe. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. We'll sit there and go, give me a shot. And then it'll be soup. And you'll be like, that's not what I meant. And you'll get all pissy and have some weird joke. Yeah. And then you can give him his shot later, you know. Or beforehand.
Think outside of the box. You know, you can do gazpacho with tequila, you know?
Oh.
And you can do gazpacho tequila shots, you know? Think out of the box.
Oh, I like the gazpacho with the tequila. That sounds really good. So it's almost like you're ceviche-ing the tomato. That's cool.
Yes.
I like that. Oh, now I'm happy. Well, Chef Ivan, it has been fun to play the food game with you.
Yes, it's been fun, guys.
Yeah, we can't wait for next month. Chef Ivan will be back for December. We'll be talking more food and more great tips. Thank you for all the great tips for
everyone.
Welcome. And for the pronunciations of things that I cannot pronounce. Everyone, Chef Ivan Flowers is on Twitter and Facebook. You can follow him there. And as I was saying earlier, his recipe is up on blendradioandtv.com. Link in the show notes. And it'll be in the next big weekly Blend magazine as well. And you get it, but just go on our site and just type in Chef Ivan and you'll get a gazillion recipe ideas for Thanksgiving and for the holidays, and they're all good and health-centric. You know, some of it may be a little naughty, yes. but it's about not eating the bad pickles, the bad peanut butter, good. And the fast food.
Everything in moderation, guys. Everything in moderation. Exactly. Life is short.
Well, that's on that right. note, I'm going to go have a glass of wine. Is that okay?
You can cheat
that's
here.
Okay.
That's okay.
Thank you all for joining us. We also want to thank the Peanut Patch over in Yuma, Arizona. They have fresh peanut butter that is made right there on site.
And they have a whole lot of goodies, too.
If you want sugar, they have sugar-free candy. By the way, we're talking about sugar-free. They have gift baskets for the holidays, all kinds of great local products like Medjool dates that are grown in Yuma, Arizona. They brought them in from Morocco before Indio, California, actually, even. And they have no natural pests, so you don't even have to worry about getting them organic. And they are the royal Medjool dates that you can stuff with peanut butter and all kinds of good stuff. But I know, Ivan, you're going to go, there's a lot of sugar in there, but it's not like a candy bar. It's better. You're going to take one of the
Actually, I'm not sure, but I think dates aren't as high in sugar as people think.
They're full of fiber. I know that.
Yep.
Very
and
full
they have
of fiber.
Vitamins.
They have some sugar, and diabetics can use them. And you may just want to cut, you know, like everything in moderation, like Chef Ivan said. But they have date shakes there too now that they didn't have before, and that's exciting. But when you think about it, the Medjool date, I mean, that's a cool thing. You can when you put cheese and jalapeno peppers and roast them. I'm just saying, jack pepper cheese inside a Medjool date wrapped in bacon. Ivan, is that a naughty? Are we allowed to do that?
Bacon is naughty.
Sounds really good to me. A little sweet goes a long way. Nice appetizer. So, good idea. So, everyone, thepeanutpatch.com. Thank you all for joining us. Thanks, Chef Ivan.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
I will. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Big Blend Radio's Big Weekly Blend Podcast. You can keep up with our shows at bigblendradio.com. And if you want to get our Big Weekly Blend magazine, just sign up for our newsletter at blendradioandtv.com.